We're delighted to have Thomas Laird with us here on the Paula Gordon Show. Phil Russell?
Well, it was a geography lesson. It is a geography lesson. It is a political lesson. It is a lesson in civilization and its absence. It was a startling exercise. You were talking about, you and Paula were talking about farmers and warrior herdsmen.
Nomads.
And that whole flow of history, in some ways, seems almost a more accurate representation of the flow of human history than what we grew up in. Part of it, I think, is the distance of it and being so far away from it, it makes it look that way. But that confluence or the contraposition of the farmers and the nomads is just a very interesting story. And it's true of the world by and large.
Everywhere.
In a way, yeah. It reflects our conversation with Jared Diamond when he was talking about guns, germs, and steel and the big issues around the human on the planet.
However, you, I think, corrected something that Jared Diamond said, but we can talk about that later.
Say it now before we forget.
Well, what he said was that the reason Western Europe, this is guns, germs, and steel, that Western Europe became so dominant is that it had been fragmented, whereas China had been unified. And that China's, because of that unification, it did not have the bumping into almost the Darwinian struggle back and forth. And yet, as
you dissipate that idea,
well, your telling of Chinese history makes that to me certainly less obvious.
Chinese history is the most. Well, first of all, I think. For me, what was amazing about writing this book was His Holiness was to come to a vision of history. The details of history, the facts, the figures, we can consult books for that. And His Holiness, doesn't know the facts and the figures in many cases, but he has a vision of history. And while I can't claim responsible authorship of this idea of the conflict between nomads and farmers in Asia, I'm a devoted disciple of Owen Lattimore, if you know his work. I mean, Lattimore is really the inventor of this. And I just feel lucky enough to follow in his footsteps. And living in Asia, when you live in Nepal, in the Himalayas, yes, I had for 30 years. You see, as you go down to the valley bottoms in Nepal, in those deep Himalayan valleys, there's people growing rice and they have cows and they're Hindus. And if they have any marriage variant, it's to one husband having several wives. And they live in one place and they never move from there. They have a lot of children. They stay right there in that one place for their whole lives. You go up to the tops on the ridges, you walk through the tree line, you emerge onto the high plains up above, and suddenly there's no more cows. Cows don't live there. There's yaks.
They can't.
And you can't grow rice up there. It's barley. And the marriage variant, if there is any, is several brothers sharing one wife. So it's this complete worldview change, and it's very clear in its environmental impact. I mean, these societies emerge from these two different environments, and so the Great Wall between China and Tibet and between China and Mongolia is really a line. It delineates an eco zone, a place between two worlds. South of the Great Wall, you can grow rice, you can live in these large urban concentrations, you can create agricultural surpluses, and then have job specialization. North of the Great Wall, there's no trees, it's a big running plateau, you can't really grow crops there. The most sensible adaption for humans there is to herd animals and live off of that, which means a completely different society, a nomadic one. You don't live behind walls, you're the opposite of a farmer in so many ways. That vision of Asia, so this book is permeated with that. And what was funny was, I came into the conversations with His Holiness at the end of 30 years in Asia. I came into that knowing Lattimore and having that vision of it. And he came to it bringing exactly the same vision, having no knowledge of Owen Lattimore. He came to the same vision that I had. And that's one of the reasons I think why we could work together is I was at the end of 30 years in Asia. So I brought a vision, he brought his vision, and together we could talk about those visions and really explore it.
The other thing that amplifies that is His Holiness's distinction that you use all the way through and help me to think much more clearly about between convention and non-convention, people who think conventionally and people who have access to, by virtue of work, a non-conventional other reality, not less reality, just other.
Right. It's an amazing concept that he brought to the table. And it took me quite a while to understand. We were in conversation for many hours before I understood that I was tripping over something. You know, I wasn't listening. I wasn't hearing. And I finally just had to say to him, what do you mean by that word connection? You know, I mean, and he has a holistic view of history. It's like he says, look, you know, if we're talking about such and such a king and such a year, that's history. That's a conventional view of the world, and that's true. And we can study the text and see what you know, find out what the facts are. Archaeology, paleontology, we can study all those. That's wonderful. However, he believes that there is a mind science in the world, and that Buddhism is a type of mind science. And through mind science, you can train your mind so you overcome greed, anger, ignorance, lust, and pride, the five primary sins. And you transform those into wisdom, into compassion. And that Buddhism is a technique, pragmatic, very non-faith-based technique, like a shovel. You've been given a shovel by the Buddha to dig into your mind and to transform it into something wiser, more powerful. And that once you achieve that level of understanding, you're able to see things in the world that those of us who have not transformed our mind simply can't see. And for him, that explains miracles, for example. I mean, for example, with Christ, he has no trouble accepting the resurrection of Christ. He doesn't believe that there's a God, so of course Jesus can't be the Son of God, but he believes that Jesus transformed his mind through and then was capable of achieving miracles, which not everyone could see, so that the disciples, having trained their mind, would be able to see Christ when he returned from the dead, as saints in Tibet, like Milarepa did. So it's a complete worldview that's really challenges people to look at things in a very different way.
Well, one of the things I found striking was, you know, the evidence-based nature of it, and
yes,
how assertive. It was interesting to watch these conversations because the impression, and it goes to that evidence-based piece, was of two people learning, that he came to this. And I think wanted to engage in this process. I had thought that he just wanted to get the history out. He wanted to get his side of the story on the record.
Yes.
And I'm sure that was part of it.
Politically, that was really important. Yes.
But I also had the sense that it was not just that. That he
Correct.
Really had set out to learn from you, to use you as a vehicle, if you will.
He does send you out to do the research.
to generate knowledge that he simply didn't have, or at least had not seen from the perspective that you brought to it.
Right. No, it was very interesting that way, because in a real conversation you are as interested in listening as you are in speaking, and when you can have that dialogue back and forth. I mean, I'm still egotistical enough that I'm always much more interested in talking than I am in listening. But
a human challenge.
But with him, that wasn't true.
Which wasn't true?
I wasn't interested in talking. I was interested in listening because he's so fascinating. And what I was forced to do was to hear what he was saying. So he would use a word over and over, like the word connection. He would say, oh yes, I believe in my past life I had a connection with the fifth Dalai Lama. Or he would say, yes, the Manchus, I believe that I have a connection in this lifetime with the Bodhisattva Chenrezig, and through that connection, right back to the Buddha. And he was using this word connection. And I said, you know, you don't really use, you mean more with this word than what we do in English. What do you mean with this word connection? And he said, well, I may not be a reincarnation of the human soul. Of course, there's no soul, but anyway, we're using the word simply, of the human soul that was the fifth Dalai Lama. He perhaps was incarnated as his human soul was incarnated around the fifth Dalai Lama and was helping him carry out his work in the time of the fifth Dalai Lama. And now he's come back. So he has that karmic connection over many lives with the fifth Dalai Lama, or he might have a he might be a reincarnation. His connection with the 13th is absolutely perhaps as a reincarnation. But he never says that. He says these things are vast and mysterious, but there are connections, and he feels it. He, you know, at a spiritual level, he feels this connection to his predecessors, but it's not as simple as we imagine. And the wonderful thing about this book is it allows him to express the nuance of who he is and how he envisions this.
We're going to come back to vast and mysterious in just a moment with Thomas Laird. Be with us when we return in a moment with the Paula Gordon Show.